And he said, the attack for tomorrow was canceled. He said, the Calgarys, as I recall, and the Black Watch have disappeared. I don't know where they are, and I have no contact with them. He said, if the Germans know, there's no troops sort of between the valley and over the ridge, and if they came through there, they could move straight through Caen and straight back to the sea. Mm-hmm. Take your battalion by the shortest possible route and sit astride the crossroads, which was actually this road running from east to Fontenay-le-Marmel, mm-hmm. on that high ground. And the ridge the crossroad we were to sit on was the last one that we crossed in our attack. But we were to sit astride this, mm-hmm. facing this knob.
What did you have? Do you have any anti-tank weapons at all?
Well, at this particular time, nothing except our own anti-tank that was with us. Yeah. And he said, you won't have time, and I don't want you to take time for a formal O group when you get back. Get those troops in there as quickly as possible. And I said, but that's crazy to put troops on that forward position under that high feature. Mm-hmm. I said, they're exposed. He said, that's an order. Move them in.
Could you not have stationed them farther back?
Oh, yes. This was my argument, and I got a direct order to place them there.
What was Young's point?
You don't stop to argue with a brigadier when he says that's an order. Get it done. Move now.
Mm-hmm. So you moved.
So I moved, and the old group was waiting when I got back, and I simply took my grease pencil from where their company position was, drew a line and an arrow and a grease circle, and said, there's your new company location. Move now by the fastest possible means, single file across country. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how we moved. Mm-hmm. And we were to set two companies forward and two companies in the rear of the crossroad. As soon as the two forward companies were in position, I reported to brigade, position secured as ordered. My next order was to my two forward companies, withdraw now to reserve position on reverse slope, move now. Mm-hmm. And I had warned them that this was my plan, so they knew where to go.
Did Young know this was your plan?
No. And the last man was just sort of disappearing over the crest at first light before the Germans opened up on us.
From the high...
From that rising ground up to the high feature. So the Germans were not very far from us.
Mm. Did you find any remnants of the Black Watch and the other units?
Not at that particular time. Later we did. Mm-hmm. They were down farther and a little bit off to our right.
So it was just poor brigade to brigade information.
That's right. So here we are sitting there, and after a couple of days, I guess it was, Fred Cliff comes back. Mm-hmm. Well, we had lots of time, lots of fun holding this position. And I can remember taking in rations and taking in ammunition and taking in a whole convoy of carrier loads of mines for minefields. People were jittery, so I, as the second in command, took over the sort of the administrative resupply at night, which is not my function. Mm-hmm. To IC, I should have been left out of battle. I should never have been in the front line. Mm-hmm. But Freddie Clift always wanted to have me around, so I stayed there. And
did you feel at all put out that you had been relegated to 2IC? Or had you expected to
come back? Oh, I expected to be 2IC when Freddie Clift came back.
But was Clift expected to come back?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. We thought he would. If they didn't promote him right away to command the brigade, we thought then he would come back. If he stayed, he would have been promoted to command the brigade. Then they would have to sort out who they were going to promote.
I see. So it was no surprise when he did.
Oh, no, no, no. And it was all temporary, and everybody understood that at this particular stage of the operation.
Mm-hmm. So in actual fact, Clift hadn't really been with the battalion in combat at all. He'd been at brigade with it.
He'd been at brigade, and then he came back, and he was in defense with us. Yeah. And we were having trouble trying to get prisoners and information, so he took a patrol out one night, yeah. Or went with a patrol one night. But this was a pretty chaotic time. We were getting shelled quite severely, and we lost a lot of troops and officers from shelling. And this was during this period was when they bombed our echelon. You remember when they bombed three division, they bombed our echelon, our B echelon, mm-hmm. knocked out our water trucks and everything else, and knocked off a few people. Mm-hmm. Most unpleasant. And it was rather a dicey time trying to get the troops. We set up improvised rest areas, actually in the line, but in the reserve, just behind battalion headquarters, actually where the old battalion headquarters had been. Mm-hmm. We created a rest area in the village of East. And a typical thing, a room like this, we'd punch a hole in the ceiling and put a Oh, a big water can on the top, and put a bunch. Put one of the old. I've even forgotten what we call them—the old burners that we used to have to accompany kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Put that on it to heat the water and the improvised shower, and the troops would come through and have a shower and a hot meal in comfort, write their letters home, and then go back in the line. We used to bring them out a platoon at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But this was our own means of keeping morale high, giving the men, you might say, reasonable rest.
Mm-hmm.
And a hot meal where they could eat in reasonable comfort.
And was morale high at this point?
It was good.
It hadn't deteriorated from...
No, I wouldn't say it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then from then, we were pulled back to the area of Ypres and moved to Roquencourt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where we took over from Rockingham, I guess, who commanded the Royal Regiment, or the Rileys, I've forgotten.
I think it was the Royal Regiment.
Royal Regiment. I know I went down and did the reconnaissance,
mm-hmm.
and Rockingham and I were caught under shell fire and hid behind the same wall. That's all I remember about that, except that we went back, and that night, of course, the German planes came across and dropped their flares, anti-personnel bombs, and all this jazz,
mm-hmm.
as we were trying to move in.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved into Barrières. And the next thing I can remember about that was Charles Folks coming down from division saying, put on a show and strength, there's no enemy there, they're all withdrawing. To which we replied, we know where the enemy are, they're just over that ridge and just beyond that next hedge.
In strength?
Because we've been in contact with them ever since we've been here, and we're sniping the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
And they're shelling us as well. He said, I don't believe that, put on a show and strength, get a section of your carriers out and go. So the carrier section was ordered to put on a show, and naturally it stuck its nose over the top and got blown to hell, and that was the end of that. Charles Folk jumped in his vehicle and disappeared.
You mentioned Young and his obstinance, and Folks and his obstinance. Is it something that was common amongst high-level officers, just pure stupidity? Because that's all it sounds like.
I don't think it was so much that they were stupid. I think some of the tactical decisions they made were stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I think they didn't like to believe what was going on below them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have, in my view, a grasp of what it's like in the battalion combat area. And the mere fact that you issue an order for something to be done doesn't mean to say it can be done.
That's right.
I thought most Canadian commanders were a bit bloody-minded, if I could use that phrase, after watching the British operate.
Mm-hmm.
The British were much more cautious and husband their resources.
Mm-hmm.
If they probed and things were a little difficult, they would pull back. They didn't hesitate to cancel something that didn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
But our commanders, I guess, wanted to be heroes and gung-ho and, you know, charge of the light brigade sort of stuff. And
do you think that perhaps it might have been that a lot of those that had attained brigadier level perhaps had never commanded a unit in action?
I think so, because they had no concept of all. Young had no idea of how to fight battalions.
Mm-hmm.
He was a signal officer, a nice man. But certainly, I think many times Freddie Clift had to report early and help him frame the orders for the brigade,
mm-hmm.
as what was possible. I would not have said he was a good brigade commander,
mm-hmm.
because some of the things he did was obviously, from a pure military point of view, not sound. You can use all the adjectives you like, but they're simply saying they're not sound.
Which says enough.
Yeah.
And this is what Folks action crew. Had they been Bremen carriers that had been sent forward, and as they reached the ridge, they had been blown?
That's right.
Yeah.
Of course, we knew the 88s were just sitting on the high ground. They found this out later when they went to attack on Totalize.
Mm-hmm.
As you recall, when it was the Armored Regiment lost all its tank in a matter of minutes, and all this nonsense.
Had you been fully aware of the reputation of the 88 at this time?
Of the 88?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we'd heard of it. And certainly it lived up to its reputation. We had earlier on seen the Desert Rats move in behind us and sort of probe and get shot at and disappear and not do any attacks. So we knew what was going on. But I'm just trying to hang the thing in its proper sequence of events as to what went on. Moving into Verrières, that's right. Because it was from Verrières we did Totalize and we went into Roquencourt.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But from the, that's, just trying to remember, that's it. We did, that was the next operation we had to do, was take Ropencourt.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the staging area for?
And that was part of Totalize.
I see.
So we withdrew from Verrières, up near Trotville Farm, into an FUP. But prior to this, and Freddie Clifton denies us to this day, issued me orders to go out and take the start line and mark it and mark the advance to the start line from the FUP. And I went out single-handedly and did this.
What did that entail?
That entails putting down white tapes, lanterns, and this type of thing so that it marks where you must go.
Mm-hmm. Was this a dangerous task in light of the fact that you
were... Well, I didn't feel very comfortable, and I have to dodge a few shells every now and then, and in 88 that sort of sniped at me a few times.
So it took fancy to you. Yeah.
So this was done, and we moved back under cover of darkness, and the attack started. Of course, you know, all these priests were there, and the armored columns were rolling,
mm-hmm.
and the battalion was rolling with it.
Were you inside these defrocked priests?
No, we were not. We were, the battalion was on foot, moving in between these armored columns. Perhaps not the smartest thing to do, because the armor did a crisscross. Now, what happened to the assault companies, I have no way of knowing to this day, because I was bringing the echelon through. And as the assault went forward, I moved forward into Verrières with the F echelon, only to find it occupied, I think, by the Calgary Regiment,
mm-hmm.
Calgary Highlanders. And I had never been told that they were going to move in there. So here we are with all our vehicles and trying to find some place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked over the ridge, and needless to say, everything was chaos. You couldn't see damn all. The German 88s were going off in all directions. Smoke, you could hear HE, you could hear armored piercing whistling over your head. And out of this haze of smoke, as I was trying to get through the village, came an artillery officer. He said, "Everything is confusion. Everybody's withdrawing. Everything's gone wrong. Withdraw. Go back."
Well, what rank was he?
Captain.
So he couldn't give you orders. He was just merely stating.
That's right. So I simply drew my pistol and said, "Move back towards where you came from and be shot by them or by me."
Was that enough to...
So he turned around and disappeared into the smoke. So by this time, I'm trying to get all the drivers out of the slit trenches and into the vehicles to move the echelon forward to close on Ropencourt.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to be in there before first light. Well, my God, I was in a Jeep, and I had all the hot sweet tea with me for the battalion. So finally, we were short of drivers, whether some got lost or killed or what, I'll never know. But I put the Padre in my Jeep and said, "Padre, you drive my Jeep." And I took a carrier, and we got all the vehicles cranked up, and we headed through this maze of smoke. And God, there were burning tanks and
this
smoke.
Colgate, Captain Colgate?
Yep.
He was the priest.
No. I'm sorry. Taylor.
Taylor was
the Padre.
I see.
Ted Colgate had something in support company. I've forgotten. So this whole echelon comes behind us, and we move in on Ropencourt.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember delivering the hot sweet tea. And I had a chat with my brother, and the next thing I know, Fred Cliff says, "Well, we've got orders to move over on that high ground, what we call Kidney Ridge Fontenay." He said, "There's reports of Germans in that area, and we've been ordered to go over and give the Camerons a help and take those prisoners."
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "I'm taking two companies with me, of which my brother's company was one." He said, "You remain in command of the remainder of the battalion." So off they went, and we could watch them from where we were, and it wasn't long before they had rounded up, I've forgotten, maybe a couple hundred prisoners or more. And then they eventually made their way back to the battalion, and Freddie Cliff came in, and he said, "I got bad news for you, John." He said, "Your brother's wounded." Fortunately, he said it quick, so I didn't have to worry, and I said, "Thank God for that, there's one less to worry about." So he was out.
Badly wounded?
Face wound. It looked like a hair lip, and all the roof of the mouth was damaged, but they did some very good surgical work on him and patched him up pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So he was back in action later?
He went back later on during the war.
Yeah.
And about Freddie Clifton, during this whole operation, had picked up a piece of shrapnel in the back, so He goes out, and I'm left again to command this ragtag outfit called the South Saskatchewan. Then a man who is known to you, I think, who sits in Parliament, Tees. Or Hees. 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 What's his first name?
Oh, I don't know.
He was the minister of something before under the Diefenbaker governor.
Oh, back in those days.
Back in, yeah. And he's in the government right now. Freddie Hees? Hees. I always confuse him with this another fellow named Tees. He was our acting, or the brigade major, by this time, of 6th Brigade. And somewhere in my papers, I got this order signed by him. Send a fighting patrol to so-and-so and do so-and-so and so-and-so. And I look through my glasses, and I can see it's held by friendly troops.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on the wireless and said to the BM, objective held by friendly troops. Reply was, doesn't matter, do it anyhow, it's good training exercise. To which I replied, don't be bloody stupid, and hang up. And that was the end of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we sat there, and I started to move the battalion on the way, which would be headed towards Falaise.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the line, Freddie Cliff came back again and took over. I think just before we were on the cross, before we crossed the Claire Latizon River. And he came back, I think, the night before, and then we were to do a night attack, or early morning attack. I was moved during the night and attack. FMR's on the left, SSR on the right, Cameron's in reserve, down across the river and up the other side onto the high ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure enough, we go down and up the other side, lots of fun we have. And Freddie says, go over to the left flank and see if you can see where the FMRs are. So I went chortling off to the left flank. There wasn't a soul in sight, no FMRs.
Mm-hmm.
So I reported back, and I'm not sure whether this is the correct sequence that I'm telling this, but this occurred during this particular phase. And then we got the word, well, first of all, we had been counterattacked that morning by the Germans, but the forward troops held.
What sort of German troops were you facing? Was it SS troops?
These were SS all through this area. They were good.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent troops.
Were they as fanatical as fighters as we've been led to believe?
Yes. Well, in one phase, I should say, they had been pulled out as we were... They started to pull some of them out as we moved Rokenkor and beyond, so it got easier.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular day, as we say, we were did the night attack, and it was successful, and they were counterattacked, and that was beaten off, and they dug in. Then we had the word that the Air Force was going to bomb, and we were to put out yellow smoke in front as the signal for them where the forward troops were and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're standing at battalion headquarters, and all the yellow flares are lit, and all the yellow smoke is going up, and we see these aircraft approaching, and we said, holy Christ, they're going to hit us. And the first ones that came bombed right through our forward companies. And as each succeeding wave came, they came closer and closer to battalion headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Until they came right at us. And I remember standing there with Freddie Cliff, and we said, there's no use running because we don't know where the bomb's going to land. And we were down in a bit of a gravel pit.
Mm-hmm.
So we stood there, and one landed on one side and one landed on the other. And then no later we pasted off. The nearest bomb was 35 paces from where we stood. But the hell of it was, my old company, B Company, was almost annihilated. It took us a day and a half to find 9 people.
How many men had been in at that point?
I would say roughly 60 or 70.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just obliterated. So, here again was a case of the battalion being in bad enough shape, but now we're getting so that we don't even have enough people to carry all the machine guns.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever find out why the mistake had been made?
Never did.
Had you had much experience with cooperation with the Air Force before?
All sorts of theory and all sorts of practice.
Yeah. Tell me, was this the famous Ghost Squadron that did this?
That I wouldn't like to say. I can't remember.
Because I've talked to a fellow in Victoria named Magnuson, Major General Magnuson, and he was squadron commander, and he was a member of the Ghost Squadron. There's a fellow in 4NX called McKay out of Sydney who was a member of it, and they were both involved in a Falaise operation. And they bombed their own troops. And it was quite a controversial issue at the time within the Air Force.
It was.
Yeah. But it really decimated South Saskatchewan.
Oh. it sure hit one company in it badly, and you know, part of the other Forbes ones.
How did something like that affect morale? I know I've asked you that quite a few times, but surely being
strange
bombed.
To say, even with heavy casualties, morale never suffered that much.
I guess morale is really a process of thinking things out, and when you're in action, you don't have the chance to.
As long as you're kept active and there's somebody commanding and taking command, I don't think morale is that great a problem. It's when you're sitting, having the help pounded out of you and not doing anything.
Yeah.
That morale is the tougher part. So let's wind up the wars. So we do this attack, and then we're on the move to close with Falaise.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, again, 2IC, and I'm supposedly LOB, but I'm staying, as we say, because we got green officers who aren't all that firm in the saddle.
Mm-hmm.
Or older officers who are now doing jobs they're not trained in who are not firm in the saddle. And I can recall, here again, we're going to move, and I'm getting a hold of the transport officer and saying, get your things on the road, and I find them hiding in the slip trench. So I give them the choice of either getting on and getting shot by them because the Germans had an SP gun somewhere down the road, and we knew it, and he knew it. He didn't want to go. I said, either be shot by them or by me. Take your choice. So he decided discretion was the better part of valor, so away we went.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with Ted Colgate, who was by this time OC support company, and we had, oh God, miles of echelon behind us. We had platoons of 4-2 mortars, platoons of machine gunners, a squadron of tank, a troop of 17-pounders, as well as our own battalion F echelon, stretching miles behind us, and that's why it was critical to get this thing wound up and get it into Falaise if and when the battalion was in there. So we got as close to the town as we could, just short of the burning church spire on the main crossroad as you enter the town. And I said to Colgate, you recce this route and look around in this area for the echelon in case we have to deploy here, because it looks like we may have to. And I'll walk into town and see what Cliff wants. So I walked into the town, and here's a sight I'll never forget. Troops still clearing the town and the burning church spire, but when they couldn't see inside a place, they turned the damn flashlight on because they didn't have enough grenades to throw a grenade in every room. So this is how they made sure no one was there. Stuck a flashlight around, turned it on. If nobody shot, they figured it was empty. Sounds stupid, but I actually saw it.
Did it work? Or did
it worked because there was no return fire, so I guess the Germans had pulled back.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined Freddie Clift, and he said, well, I'm going to go up. I think it was just short of the railway station.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, bring the echelon in as far as you can into town and get some rations up. And he said, have the commanders report to me. And in other words, that really means curl them up on the entrance. And that's this area that I had wrecked, or told Colgate to wrecked. And I said, I went back and I said, Ted, I said, the CO wants the echelons curled up around here. And I said, now, have you checked this route here? And I said, the road I told you to? He said, yep. So I said, well, let's have a look. And we jumped in it and started to turn a corner, and that's the last I remembered.
The mine.
So the next thing I know, some Provo are digging me out of the ditch, and they tell me that we've gone up in an anti-tank mine, and there's the remains of the Jeep sitting partially off the road, and all I know is they throw me into a vehicle, and I end up back at battalion headquarters in REP.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hopping around on one foot. Of course, I can't hear with the dam. I guess I look a bit of a mess because there's my nose and mouth and ears were full of blood and guck.
How's Colgate?
I learned later, I don't recall talking to him or seeing him at that occasion. Mm-hmm. Whether I did or not, I don't know. I learned later that he just had, I think, a broken eardrum, and that was all.
Mm-hmm. And your wounds were to the foot?
My eardrums were completely blown out. Blew me right out of the Jeep.
Mm-hmm. Your eardrums are blown?
Yep.
Is that something that can be repaired by surgery?
No. Nope. Just by luck, they heal. They grew over and they're all scar tissue.
Yeah.
So as a result, I have a loss of tone. In other words, I only hear in certain tones, not the high end or the low end of the scale.
How does that affect your music appreciation?
It means that you don't. Anything that anybody can hear on a higher region, just impossible for me to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Certain telephones I can't hear, certain noises I don't hear. Or in the lower range I don't hear. Used to be hell for the first few years after the war. especially at a cocktail party or any party where there is more than one person talking, mm-hmm. because you have the ringing in your ears that went on for years, and with the noise, just about drive you crazy. Mm-hmm.
Do you still get the ringing now, or
no? That stopped. That stopped. Fortunately.
Okay, so you're back at the battalion aid station.
At the battalion RAP, and I'm trying to convince Doc Hader, as we call him, that there's no need to evacuate me, but he thinks they should. And the next thing I know, he's got a needle in my arm, and I don't remember another thing until I vaguely remember going through a field ambulance, and I was being lifted into one of those box types ambulance vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and somebody jabbed me in the arm again. The next thing I knew, I came to, I was in the 108 British General in Bayeux.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am. And of course, I'd had dysentery off and on all this time.
That was sort of rife in the front line.
Oh, terrible. Just terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm skin and bone, and they're trying to fatten me up, get me to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they hadn't x-rayed me or anything by this time. So, next thing I know, the head surgeon is in, and they have a telegram in their hand, and he said, "Why are you so important to your battalion?" I said, "I have no idea." And he said, "Well, they want to know if you're going to be fit to go back to command." And he said, "What are you commanding?" Well, I said, "I'm only second in command," which really what it meant was to go back to command. Was I going to be fit to command the battalion?
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to the officer who was with him and simply said, "This officer replied, unfit for further operational duty, evacuate to the UK. He said, if you had arrived here 24 hours sooner, you'd have gone directly to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we've had a change of policy and you will now be sent back to the UK. So I think next day, by ambulance, by duck, by hospital ship, and by further ambulance, I ended up in somebody's hospital. I don't know where it was.
Mm-hmm. Before you get there, why had a telegram come to you that Cliff had been injured or wounded?
He was going to command a brigade.
Oh, I see.
And by this time, I guess there was no senior officer left in the battalion who had had much experience or who had been with them any length of time. I believe one, if not, June Thomas commanded on a temporary basis after I left. He was clobbered. Pretty Cliff had gone to command a brigade.
Mm-hmm.
He was clobbered. There was another chap who was a reinforcement commander. I've forgotten his name. He had not really served with us. He'd come, I think, from the sea force or somewhere else and had been sent up and was commanding our reinforcement company. He reported in, being a major, he commanded, and he was knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they put in a temp somewhere in amongst all this. They had a fellow named Ritchie, and he was relieved. And then they ended up with Vern Stott, who took them right through to the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story short, here I am. I end up in hospital, and I get shunted down to 22nd General Bramshott.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all the x-rays, and they say, you've got a fractured foot, and your eardrums are blown, and all this jazz. I couldn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
If you turned the radio on full tilt, I could tell you the radio was on. If you got about 6 inches from my ear and hollered, I could make out what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
In one side and not on the other.
Let's end right there.